Good morning, ladies and gentlemen. I'd like to thank the Danish Institute for International Studies for hosting this event, and would like to thank all of you for coming to this discussion about the European Union and the role we are supposed to play and we are playing in our neighborhood. And I shall start by sharing a few thoughts about the European Union itself before we go further on the role we want the EU to play. And obviously I have to state what we all know, that EU is not in its best shape right now. The debt crisis is an unprecedented challenge. Sometimes the whole question of European identity is being put under question. But we have to say very clearly that the situation is serious, but it's not desperate. We have the tendency to portray things in darker colors than they really deserve. But the solution is in our hands. There is no perfect solution, and no solution can be found overnight. But we have many pieces of puzzle already being put together, have agreed on them, have adopted them, such as the European Stability Mechanism, Fiscal Compact, two-pack, six-pack, also with the great contribution of the Danish presidency. So what we need is to show that we are not only good at adopting different proposals and solutions, but also at putting them into practice. Because it's also well known that the Stability and Growth Pact have been violated more than 60 times with no consequences before. So we have to prove that when we agree on certain rules, we must be equally good at implementing these rules or drawing consequences if the implementation is not there. We have been able to identify the root causes of our current problems and difficulties. I think that the June European Council and last week's October European Council produced good message to all our citizens. They drawn the basic lines of action for the future. And now we have to be thorough and consistent in implementing what has been agreed. Because we must not forget that we have not lost our economic power. European Union is still the largest market in the world, and it's an economic giant. Our GDP together is far bigger than the accumulated GDP of the BRICS countries, for example. It's bigger than the GDP of the United States. What we have lost is the confidence of markets. We have lost confidence of our citizens. We have lost the confidence that we are able to stand up to the challenges we are facing, that we are able to offer solutions that will improve and remedy the current situation. So what we need right now is a vision. We need a leadership. Europe has always been a work in progress. And what was the element that made us so strong was our ability to seek and find joint solutions. And we must prove to our citizens and to the external world that we have not lost this ability. We have to focus on quality, on good solutions, rather than on quantity of solutions. We have to be able to implement what has been agreed. We have to find the balanced solutions. It's clear that we have to take European integration further and deeper than we have thought some years back. It's clear that we will have to delegate more competences to European institutions, and of course the basic elements of these new architectures have been described by President Van Rompuy's reports. Here it's important to find a proper balance between supranational, that means European competences, and national competences. It's really important that we do not lose the democratic legitimacy of what we do, because we can come up with perfect solutions, but if we are unable to communicate this to our citizens, it will never work. If our citizens don't understand what we are doing, we will fail. And we must not forget that European project is a democratic project. That means everything we do must have the approval and understanding of our citizens. We have to have our citizens on board. We must also not forget that even if solidarity is one of the cornerstones of European projects, it can only go hand in hand with individual responsibility. Each member of the European Union must be responsible towards its own commitments and towards the rest of the European Union, and then we can ask for solidarity. And with this, I believe we can looking to the future with optimism, and I am an optimist here. But regardless of the problems European Union is facing, the Union still remains the most successful model of integration. And when I hear people saying that EU is not so attractive as they thought it would be, I always ask, compared to whom? Compared to what? Show me another model of integration that exists in real life, that has achieved better, higher standards of political stability, of economic prosperity, of protection of human rights and basic democratic freedoms. There is none. We must not forget it. European Union is extremely successful politically, and it was just been recognized by awarding the Nobel Peace Prize upon us, which is well deserved. Economically, as I said, the biggest economy in the world, the biggest common market in the world, the biggest investor, or one of the two biggest investors in the world. Of course, has reached unprecedented levels of human rights protections and living standards. What is very special about European Union is that we generate soft power by our ability to lead by example, and by our courage to be the front runners, to be those who provide best practices. And we must not lose this. We have the power to inspire, because many regions in the world are trying to repeat or to bring the similar models of integration. And what's also important about European Union is that our power to transform is specific, because we do not force the other countries to transform, but we rather encourage them to transform themselves, which was exactly the case of countries of Central Europe, because it was the perspective of European integration that made us to go into all the changes and all the reforms and make our system compatible with the one of European Union countries. So this is all that makes European Union a global player. And we have to live up to this role and to up to the expectations of other regions, regardless of the current daily problems we are facing right now. We must not put our global ambitions on the back burner because we are busy with our internal affairs. Even if these difficult times, we must not forget that there is life outside of the European Union, that there are regions that are looking at us, and that which are expecting European Union to play its global role. And we want to have our neighbors on our side. We want our neighbors to implement our standards and our values, rather than to leave them up in the space open for all kinds of instability and turbulences. So we must not resign from our global role. We have no right to do so. And we should not get lost in our internal problems, and we must not let behind our ambitions to lead, as we have been able to do in providing stability and prosperity to many countries outside of the European Union. This is about our interests, but this is also about our responsibility. Strong and united Europe is important, not just for us, but for the whole international community. And this is particularly the truth when we speak about the regions which are adjacent to the European Union, the Balkans and our neighborhood, both to the south and to the east. Now let me focus more on these regions. I'll start with the Balkans. And again, I will state the obvious that there is no alternative to the enlargement perspective for the countries of the Western Balkans. We can ask a simple question: what would the Balkans look like if there was no enlargement perspective? And I don't think we want to know the answer. Despite many complaints about Europe not paying enough attention to the enlargement process, this is not true, because the commitment still stays, it's still there. And Croatia and Montenegro are two most recent examples that show that the process is alive. And then whenever the country puts the European integration as its number one priority, and it lives by this priority, and it's able to convince the member states that this is the number one priority, the reward comes in the form of the full membership or in the form of opening accession negotiations. So there is no such thing as enlargement fatigue. That is less enthusiasm, less time, less money, but there is certainly no less space for internal reforms for the candidates and the aspirants countries, and there is no less commitment. As we just heard, and as we all know, just a few days ago the European Commission presented its regular enlargement package, and it's between now and the December summit when we have to try to come to a consensus that will be reflected in Council conclusions that should send a clear message to the region of the Western Balkans that we are both ambitious and encouraging when it comes to the enlargement perspective. But at the same time, we have to be very clear by saying that the enlargement is neither a charity nor humanitarian assistance. We provide European perspective to the countries of the Balkans, but this is not a gift to them. This is not something we owe to them. This is not our mercy. Bringing new members into European Union should make the European Union stronger rather than weaker. And therefore, the conditionality is the key word. And this is the principle of utmost importance. This is why we have to insist on the famous on its own merits approach. We must be sure that the future membership will not only bring the benefits to the aspirants and candidates, but also to the European Union. And we must ensure, particularly now, in difficult times, that our effort and our money are not wasted. There is no room for shortcuts. There is no room for lobbying. There is no room for adjusting our conditions to time schedules, political calendar of different countries. We have to have a vision. We have to be flexible. We need to have a political approach, because it's really strange that it's the countries of the Western Balkans who tell us how important this process is politically, and it's us who tell them how important the fulfillment of technical criteria is. And of course, it's a mixture of both. But it's a profoundly political process which is based on meeting, fulfilling technical criteria. So I agree with the Commission proposal. I agree with the package that was presented by the Commission. I think it's realistic. There is no need to repeat what is in the package. But let's look at the major challenges here. Macedonia is a country that has been recommended 4 times by the Commission and has been rejected 3 times by the Council. I don't think we can afford the luxury of repeating the same exercise again and again and again, and to naively expect that it will bear no consequences, no negative consequences. So I know that all those who are supposed to be working are working on finding a compromise and finding a consensus for the December summit. We are not there. But I think it would be a mistake if we just repeat the same message this December, because we can not say no and go on and act as if nothing happens. If we say no to Macedonia for the 4th time, we have to be able to offer something else. We don't have this something else now, but it's a real country, real people, and they need to have a real perspective. Serbia-Kosovo dialogue is a key element in the process of integration for both Serbia and Kosovo, and it's very good that the dialogue is taking place. It's good that this time we have a political process led by the High Representative Ashton herself and the 2 prime ministers. We can discuss about the modalities, about the elements which have to be in the dialogue or not necessarily, about the speed, about the level of our ambitions. But what is important is that the process must go on, because this is what is important for the entire region, the normalization of atmosphere, normalization of relations. It must become a non-event when the Serbs and Kosovars meet and sit down and discuss. And they should discuss issues that are equally beneficial for the citizens from both sides of the border. And we shall extend our support to this dialogue and to Lady Ashton. And one very painful issue in this dialogue is, of course, the issue of the north, of Kosovo. I don't think there is any country, there is any serious player who can be satisfied with the current situation there. No laws are applied. No system is functioning. It's something between the black hole and frozen conflict. And therefore, it should be in the interest of both Belgrade and Pristina to find a solution that will bring European system into the north of Kosovo. Anticipating the question that would inevitably come, I will tell you a few words about Slovakia's position on Kosovo. And I would stress that our parliament adopted a resolution preventing the government from recognizing the independence, which is based on the fact that we have missed one of the two important elements in the process of independence of Kosovo, namely either the agreement between the two parties involved or the resolution of the United Nations Security Council. We don't think that individual declaration of independence is the best way forward as a model for the world architecture. At the same time, I want to stress that our position is not the one of hostility. On the contrary, we have our diplomatic mission in Pristina. We are recognizing the documents, we are issuing visas, we are receiving delegations, we are sending out delegations. We are supporting European perspective for Kosovo. We have voted for the December Council conclusions, which had three very concrete elements related to the European perspective for Kosovo. So there is a lot of space that can be covered also within the limits of the national position of my country, and therefore it's certainly not a problem. And would be a mistake, would be a naivety to try to look for solutions to Kosovo problems outside of Kosovo. It's not the position of Bratislava or Madrid or Bucharest. The problems that Kosovo is facing are to be addressed in Kosovo. And as I'm saying this to you, of course, I have said it many times to my friends in Kosovo. Albania is probably the only country in the region that is not facing, I would say, existential issues such as what's the name or what's the territory of the country, and therefore there are no objective limits for the country to be moving much faster forward than it does. But unfortunately, the internal division of the country has become stronger than their common drive or common wish to get closer to the European Union. And everything is fully in the hands of the two leaders, the Prime Minister Berisha and the leader of opposition Edi Rama, and there is not much we can do or we can help. They have to understand that if there is a priority, it has to be respected as priority. Bosnia-Herzegovina is a very difficult case, and right now we lost the speed and the dynamism as a result of what I would call an unforced error, when after 16 months the government was finally put together, and it took only 3 months when the politicians decided to change the composition of the coalition, and they got stuck again, and therefore this year is lost year again. But right now it looks like we are back on track on agreeing who is in the government, who is in the opposition, which is the first precondition for restarting the normal dialogue. So this is about the Balkans. Few words about our neighborhood policy. Here I want to say that European Union has its responsibility, and it's really important that we live up to the expectations. There should be no competition between our attention to the south and to the east, even though sometimes it looks like there is, because we have to judge the performance of individual countries according to their commitment to fundamental European values and principles, because this should be the key element of the European neighborhood policy. And it's important to maintain the balance in our attention between to the south and to the east. I want to speak more about the eastern partners, because this is where Slovakia is mostly active and visible. The key element is that we do not offer, enlargement perspective. We do not offer membership perspective to the countries of the East, and this opens some fundamental questions whether this is good or not. We offer them political association, economic integration, and visa liberalization. Is this are these elements strong enough for them to go into the necessary transformations? Can we compete with this offer, an offer that comes from Russia, let's say, or other countries or other regions? I want to say very clearly that Eastern Partnership is a program for the countries of Eastern Partnership. It's certainly not a program against Russia or anybody else. It is sometimes perceived so or so commented, but it's certainly not the case. We do believe that political stabilization and economic stabilization of the countries in our common neighborhood is in interest of both European Union and Russia. We want to have more predictability. We have to have more compatibility. We are ready to open up our economic space to these countries, and we believe that it's threatening no one, and it should be welcomed and appreciated. We have to face the reality that the European Union is not ready to offer membership to these countries. At the same time, this is an open-ended program. That means it does not provide for membership, or does not offer the guarantee, but it does not exclude it either. So my answer to the partners from the Eastern Partnership countries when they complain about the unclear vision is that the end stage of the process is what you make out of it. And it's in your hands, and it's up to your activities, whether this will be a substitute to the enlargement or a way to the enlargement. Moldova shows that this could be a program for enlargement. And it doesn't sound like a nonsense in the European circles when Moldova's membership in the European Union is mentioned. This is a country that is doing everything right, and the results are visible. And it's good that we are applying the more for more principle and less for less principle, and it's good that the country is benefiting much more from European programs and from European friendship and from European money, because this is what they deserve. Ukraine is a very difficult nut to crack, because the country is important, but your geopolitical importance cannot be a substitute for your effort, for your reforms, or for lack of them. And lately, Ukrainian leaders tend to say that we don't need European Union because we can go to Russia, and we can go to Turkey, we can go elsewhere. And here I like the answer given by Karel Bild, who said that those who want to go everywhere usually end up nowhere. You have to know where you want to go. I am very sorry about the state of relationship between the European Union and Belarus. I don't think it's our choice. Simply the leadership of that country shows no interest in bringing or improving the quality of our relationship. And when I talk to partners from Belarus, I tell them, fine, I appreciate the quality of relations you have with China and with Venezuela and you name it, but Iran, but this is not your natural environment. You are a European country. And it's normal that in Europe we have the best relations with our neighbors, and the strongest cooperation is the one in our region. So something is wrong if you cannot communicate to your neighbors, and don't put the blame on the European Union. We are ready, but if even the easiest offer, such as to start negotiations about the visa facilitation, are being turned down, then there is not much we can do. And I feel sorry for the citizens because, as I said, Belarus is a European country, and they deserve to to live by the European standards. Georgia receives our appreciation for the way the elections were conducted and for a surprisingly orderly transition of power, and it shows that the investment into democracy paid off and it works well, and democracy works because democracy sometimes brings changes of the government, and the European Union extends its hand to a new leadership in Georgia. We, I believe, have to make sure that the process continues, the transition continues the same elegant way as it started with the elections, and that all the programs, Georgia is among the front runners of the Eastern Partnership program, so there is a mutual interest to continue on this path. And we are working to prepare the next Eastern Partnership summit a year from now in Vilnius, which is always a good target to speed up our effort and to be able to present concrete results. Eastern Partnership is a very multifaceted and versatile program. It's a lot of substance in it, and I do hope that the next summit will show that it's a very serious program that offers a credible alternative and offer to our partners. So, to conclude, I'd like to summarize my key points. First, we should speak with one voice. That means our messages, our European messages to our neighborhood must be unambiguous. We must be tough but clear, and this is always better than to be polite but confusing. Second, we must ensure that the door remains open, regardless of the problems the European Union is facing. We must provide our partners in the Balkans an integration perspective that is tangible, viable, and credible. Third, we have to respect the rules of the game. We have to demand respect for the rules of the game, but we have to respect the rules of the game ourselves. We must not be tempted, as we have been a couple of times in the past, to add new elements into the process to our liking, which have not much to do with European standards. So no new conditions. But we have to apply the more for more and less for less principle of differentiation and individual performance. We have to help our partners to look into the future and not to the past. This is still quite present in our neighborhood, and it's certainly not helpful. We shall remind them that history should be left to historians, and the responsibility of politicians is to deal with the present in the interest of the future. We have to stress that the homework must be done at home. We must push for local ownership, and we must again avoid the temptation of a political engineering, because we have seen more than once in the past that we were trying to impose something that we believed was our perfect solution, but it seemed perfect in our cabinets, but certainly not in real countries, real regions in the Balkans and to the east. So however imperfect, if it's local ownership, we have to embrace it and we have to support it. And of course, the ultimate goal and the homework for ourselves is to stabilize our European project, because this is the best we can do to maintain the attractiveness and the credibility of the European perspective and of the European Union. Ladies and gentlemen, thank you very much for your attention.